Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. That is Hebrews 10:23. This is Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Our guest today is New Jersey foster and adoptive mom, Jamie Becker. Jamie and her husband, Doug, have four daughters, 11-year-old Jacqueline, adopted through foster care, 9-year-old Katie, adopted from China, 8-year-old Caroline came naturally, and 2-year-old Lacey was also adopted through foster care. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you, Sandra.
It's such an honor to have you on the show. We chatted the other day, and I just loved our conversation and your whole story. But let's start at the beginning of your story, because I found that to be fascinating as well. What led you and Doug to foster an adoption?
Well, our story is quite interesting, as all of God's stories that he writes are. I heard a quote that said, God writes the best stories, and that's definitely true in our lives. My husband and I could not have come from a more different path. My husband, even how we met on a blind date in 2001 in Chicago, but I can tell you my husband, I would have never gone on a date with him if I had known him when he was a teenager and I was a teenager. He was a drug dealer. He was a party animal. He was always a nice guy, but he knew of the gospel, but he didn't let it change his life at all. He is from New Jersey. That's how we ended up back here. I'm from Texas. And in New Jersey, he had kind of some difficulties growing up. And because of that, he chose a more party lifestyle. He was a famous DJ in New York City in the underground rave scene. And it just could not be more different than me. I was squeaky clean, straight-laced, brought my Bible to school every day, had never even tried a cigarette my whole life. I still haven't. So we came from different paths, but what united us was Christ, because my husband had been actually on 2020. He had been interviewed by 2020 when he was a teenager, turning about 19. And after that, he laid low for a while. And he was asked to go on a mission trip to South America and tell people about Jesus. They needed a bass player for the mission trip. So he went. And he was high on drugs and arrives in this country. And he's supposed to tell people about Jesus. And he was just totally dumbfounded in how he was going to do this. And he sat down with a missionary and basically said, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to tell people about Jesus. And the missionary sat down with him and showed him a passage from John 6, where Jesus, a lot of people are deserting Jesus, a lot of his followers, not his disciples, but his followers. And Jesus turns to his disciples and he says, feel free to leave. If you want to leave, you can go ahead and leave too. And basically, one of them says to him, Lord, to whom else would we go? You alone have the words of eternal life. Doug talks about how that verse hit him like a sword through his heart and pierced through his heart. And he realized that he had tried everything. He had tried popularity and partying and drugs and everything, and nothing meant anything apart from Jesus Christ. And that's when God really drew him in, and he began a relationship with the Lord, where God was the Lord of his life, the boss of his life. And he got off of drugs, and he gave his life to Jesus. He went to 2 years after that is when I met him. in Bible school at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. And that's where we met on a blind date. So fast forward to that, November 1st, 2001. And we meet on a blind date. And I knew nothing about this guy, but that he had a crush on me. And I thought, how shallow. He doesn't know me. But he had heard that I loved the Lord. And so we went on this blind date. And on the blind date, he asked me about me. And I told him about my love for the Lord and how I always wanted to serve him and be a missionary of sorts, and how I wanted to adopt one day. And he listened. And then I asked him about him, and my jaw, I think, hit the ground. He starts telling me all this stuff, and I go, oh boy. And instead of it becoming a thing where I could have run in the other direction, I was so drawn to him. And I thought of the verse that says, many a man claims to have unfailing love, but a faithful man who can find. And I was just struck by how much this man loved Jesus Christ and wanted to make a difference in the world. And that's what drew me to Douglas. And that's the same thing that has sustained us through this adoption journey of the past 6 years. So that's kind of, I remember exactly where we were in Chicago when I said, are you okay? Once we started dating, not on the first date, Sandra, I said, are you okay having biological children and adopting? And I remember exactly what street we were on Wells Street in Chicago. And he said, yes. And man, did I hold him to that. And he held me to it too. So that's our long and short answer.
Wow. Incredible beginning. For sure. And now you do have four precious gifts from God, and each of them have amazing stories. You have one biological daughter, Caroline, she was born first. And then after that, you began to walk out that dream of adoption. And you, all of these children that you've brought into your family have amazing God stories. But let's focus today on talking about Katie and her story. Share with us Katie's story.
Sure. So Katie, she was in China and was born in China. My Katie story, I'm sure you've had many stories like this if you have the International Adoption Mom speaking, but my Katie in China at the time, they had just started to have some safe haven spots where you could safely leave a baby, the child would be safe, and almost like if you saw the documentary, I believe it was called, was it called Safe Box? Mm-hmm. About Korea. But basically that was a movement that was starting in China at the time. But my Katie at that time in that area, not far from Beijing, China, in Handan City, Shijiazhuang, very close to Shijiazhuang in Hebei province. But basically, that's my messed up Chinese tones there. in that area, her mother gave birth to her. We do not believe her mother knew during the pregnancy, probably. It would be very hard to see on an ultrasound that my daughter was born without ear canals. So she actually has no holes to her ears on either side. It's completely closed. I picture, you know, that her mom gave birth to her, and her mom was completely overwhelmed and scared because China does not have the social, economic infrastructure that we have here in the U.S. And I truly believe that her mom was overwhelmed, scared, didn't know what to do. There's so many factors. And actually, one of my favorite books that has helped me understand that is the book, A Message from an Unknown Chinese Mother. Amazing book, but really gives a perspective of what goes through these women's minds when they have to abandon their children the only way they can. So she actually, approximately 2 months old, on March 9th, 2010, wrapped Katie in a red blanket and left her outside a village in Handan City, right outside the gate of the village. It was hard to imagine what that was until I went and I met people from Handan City, and they explained it was a very, very busy city gate. And a lot of times in these circumstances, they wait, almost like Moses's mother and sister wait to see that the child is safely picked up. So we know that two teenagers called the police when they found this baby with a little blanket, and she was very sick and tiny, and of course without ears, and she had a little bag of formula pinned to her blanket, and they called the police, and then she was given to the orphanage in Handan City. I believe her mother did that because she felt she had no other choice and had no future for her. There's no way her mother would have known that she had autism as well. And we do believe perhaps even her autism came later from something called institutional autism, from being in an institution for 4 years. So Katie was in the orphanage and basically kind of lived in a metal crib for years and years. And there's some things that we can see that even though the orphanage did go through, thank goodness, some reform, that probably she didn't have any human interaction too much until maybe once or twice a day getting changed and fed. We know that from many different things from her behavior, as well as she was abused. She has scars from the top of her head to the bottom of her feet. And some of those are self-inflicted from being in a crib and having nothing else to do but to scratch at your body. So that's my Katie. Now, how did we come about meeting her? We had decided that we wanted to attempt to go through international adoption, that we learned that China at the time was only accepting applications for people looking to adopt children with some form of special need. I started researching, decided the special need that perhaps I would be most apt to take care of, most equipped, would be deafness. I have my degree in linguistics. And then I saw that we had a deaf school only 4 miles from us in New Jersey, the best deaf school in the state. So I said, well, let's do it this way. We'll start looking at deaf children, and I'll start learning sign language. So I started learning sign language. I picked it up really fast because of my linguistic background. And I started preparing for a deaf child. I remember exactly the day I saw a video of our Katie. She was, of course, bald. Most of the orphans in China had their head shaved. And she was bald and standing in this little alleyway. And there's just something, I have this with each of my children, but this moment where I saw this child and I said, this is my child, where I just connected to this little human soul and my soul said, you're mine, you're my daughter. Mm-hmm. And she stood there in this alleyway looking confused, but then all of a sudden looked up at the camera and lit up in this beautiful smile. And I said, that's my daughter. So We chose her, and from the time we chose her to the time she was in our arms was 9 months, even though I had, before that, when we decided to do this, I took on another job. I really put my hard work where my mouth was, took on another job and saved up and applied for grants. I raised $36,000 in 10 weeks.
Wow.
By the Lord's grace. I don't know how I did it, Sandra. I look back and I go, woo.
Yeah.
But one of the grants was from Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Yes.
His organization, Show Hope, wonderful organization, and a couple others. And people that gave generously and opened their pockets. We had so many people that would give a $1,000 gift, and even people that really couldn't afford it, but said, we believe in what you're doing for this orphan. So we had so many people standing with us. It felt like a village. And I started blogging at the time. I still have the blog out there for people to read. If you want to read the play-by-play, it's Heart Set on Pilgrimage. Jamie Becker, our story to Katie. And basically, during that time, I had 50,000 people watching. 50,000 on the blog watching us go to China. Now, there's an analogy within special needs, talks about a trip to Holland. When I share, and I do speak in a lot of venues, when I share about my story with Katie, I often share like this. I say, I prepared for the country of deafness. I learned the language. I packed my bags for deafness. I learned people that I met people that came from the country of deafness. So deafness is what I was preparing for. And then I arrived on May 5th, 2014 with a jolt into the country of autism. Mm-hmm. And I was completely awestruck. And it's hard because when I talk about that day, Sandra, there's a dichotomy. There's two parts to it. There's this, and you can even watch the video on YouTube and you'll see it in my face of her walking in the hotel in Shijiazhuang and this look of me just falling utterly in love with this child. And I had loved her for 9 months, just like a pregnancy, prayed for her, longed for her, worried for her. And here she arrived, this cute little thing, into the lobby, had never seen anything like a lit up hotel lobby before. And I basically, 90 seconds into meeting her, realized, literally 90 seconds, because I had worked with children on the spectrum before, that she had a very pervasive condition of severe autism, that this was not a little thing. It wasn't a couple characteristics that I had noticed in a later video we had received, but that she had, it was going to be a huge battle. And when I talk about it, I often say that I felt like, I remember gripping onto the Lord, gripping onto him, like if we had physically done it, my fingernails marks would be in God's arm, Sandra, gripping onto the Lord and saying, oh, no, 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 no. You are not going to leave me now. You did not bring me this far to leave me, God. Don't you leave me now. Mm-hmm. And there's only a handful of times in my life. I have a very close walk with the Lord. I trust him. But there's a handful of times in my life where I remember asking him, where are you, God? And this was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I remember just clutching onto him in my mind. And you can see it in my face in the video.
Wow.
And I say to him, Lord, don't you leave me now. Don't you dare leave me now. You brought me to this child. You told me this was my child. And now this is not the child that I expected. And there's so many reasons I'm grateful for that moment. So many reasons. But I really felt like someone who maybe arrived at the bottom of Mount Everest and instead thought it was just going to be a hill and realized they didn't have what they needed in their backpack for the trip up Mount Everest. And maybe they weren't going to make it back down. That's how I felt, Sandra.
Wow.
So this feeling of, whoa. And it took me so long to process it. I didn't process it correctly on the trip. I mean, I couldn't. Plus, I didn't know. There's always a question mark of, will she get better in the next few months? Will she, you know, I saw all these other China adoption moms who were doing great and their children, their deaf children were signing sentences by the end of day three in China, you know, because she had no language whatsoever. They didn't teach her any sign language. So I was expecting things and realized right away my expectations were dashed on the rocks and were completely false. But at the same time, I completely fell in love with her. Absolutely adored her. My husband and I did. Our daughter, Kara, who was three at the time, and Katie was four, fell in love with her. We accepted her as our baby. We weren't going to leave her. We adopted her 24 hours later. For good, and we knew what we were doing, and we do not regret it then, we do not regret it now. She is our daughter, the same as if I had pushed her out like I did Kara. Mm. So that's kind of where we were at in China. Now, when we got home, You know, from the adoption community, people do this idea of cocooning.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? Where
yes.
they say, okay, now don't pick up my daughter. I'll pick up my daughter. Don't feed her. I'll feed her, to teach them this sense of bonding that they never had. And it is great. It's a great principle. But especially the part, this idea that we're not going to have other people come over and visit, we're not going to go to a lot of public places. It was a disaster for a mom that had just figured out her daughter had autism. I was just so isolated. I didn't even know how to tell people how isolated I was. I had absolutely no compass of what was going on with my motherhood. I felt alone. I remember those days were so dark. They were so dark, but I still had the hope of, okay, God's with me, and I think it's going to get better. It'll definitely get better, right? It has to get better. But I really didn't know many special needs moms. I only knew one that went to our church, Amy Hanlon, who I later asked to be the co-chair of my support group. So she really was the only one that I had who kind of would tell me it's going to get better and gently give me advice and encouragement. But no one else. All these people, I would go to play dates and I would feel so alone. And in fact, at the time, my husband was a pastor. He was a pastor for 7 years, a senior pastor, and he's still a pastor, but now he's on a very large staff of a big church here in New Jersey, Emergence. But at the time, he was a senior pastor of a church who was wonderfully supportive. The church as a whole was wonderfully supportive. But at the time, we had some folks that just were not supportive of us and our decision to adopt Katie. They actually tried to do almost an intervention of sorts to stop Doug from adopting Katie right before our trip. And
wow.
I didn't find out till years later, Sandra. And I couldn't be more proud of my husband, because I'm so glad he didn't tell me at the time. I think it would have rattled me. But I remember what he told me he said to them in response. All these men who had come to intervene and say, do not adopt this little girl. She'll ruin your life. She'll ruin your life. She'll ruin your marriage. And he turned to them and he said, I'm sorry, guys, but if I was to obey you, I would be disobeying my God.
Wow.
And my God has told me this is my daughter, and we will pursue this, and we will obey my God. And he will see it through.
Mm.
And Doug really clung to that. In the time, I would say Doug was my rock, because he saw Katie in such a different way than I saw Katie. He saw Katie as, he saw her as this beautiful little girl that it didn't matter what other people thought. And that's how I should have seen her. And I did. But I struggled in those early days. And I remember I used to say, but Doug, people say that she won't amount to anything. And all these dreams you have for your child, they're being dashed across the rocks. And he said, Jamie, it doesn't matter. It does not matter if she is what people expect of her. It doesn't matter if people, other people, the world values Katie. Katie is valuable because she's our daughter, mm-hmm. and she's made by God, and she's valuable regardless of what anyone thinks of her. She has value apart from anyone else's value they try to put on her.
Yeah.
And that was transformative for me, Sandra. I needed that, and I often say Katie broke me, but I don't mean it in a bad way. I mean it in the best of ways, because Katie broke in me something that needed to be broken.
Mm.
It was the part of me that thought I could be a Pinterest mom and that I needed to be a Pinterest mom. It was the part of me that thought, ooh, let me make sure my makeup looks right. Let me make sure my house has no crumbs on the floor. She broke me of all of that, because that's all superficial.
Yeah.
It matters to, it's not important.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is, it's not, your kids don't need a mom who is a Pinterest mom and has no crumbs on the floor. They need a mama who has joy.
Mm.
And until I could connect with that, there was no way I was going to be able to be a good mama.
Yeah.
And it is hard because I've had times in my life where I had, I love this idea of God is my judge. God is my judge. And in fact, we just this year lost a baby and we named him Daniel because the word name Daniel means God is my judge.
Mm.
And it's something that is very deeply felt in my heart, because during that time of all these people, this group of people that didn't like Katie and thought that we made a mistake, and man, they really thought we made a mistake when she came home and had autism. I remember I used to walk in front of them and try to gather up my courage, and I would be bitter, really bitter. Here I was supposed to be praising the Lord, and I would be bitter at these people. And it took me time till I finally came to the realization that I don't care what they think of me. They would spread rumors. Jamie's a bad mom. Jamie, look at Katie. She couldn't possibly be a good mom if Katie acts like this. Look at her behaviors. Mm. I mean, it's really evil.
Aww.
And I had to turn my heart to the Lord and say, God, you are my judge and no one else. You are the one who looks at me and finds me enough in Christ. You are the one who tells me I'm beautiful, I'm worthy, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm okay because of you, God, and I don't need anyone else's approval. Until I got to that place, really wrestling on my knees in the dirt of despair and feeling alone in isolation, I couldn't be a good mom to Katie. And that time I really struggled with depression and anxiety. I had never had that level of anxiety before, where I finally had to go to the doctor. I had to realize, oh, I do need some medicine. I'd never been that way. And the doctor looked at me and said, Jamie, your brain can only hang on so long.
Yeah.
Your brain is literally crashing from the amount of anxiety being thrown at it. And I had to realize that wasn't a negative thing. That was positive. I had to cope and be a good mom. I also, at that time, realized there was no support within an hour and a half drive of where I lived. And I started a support group called Moms of Treasures.
Mm.
That group has been transformative for me. People often say to me, oh, you teach them how to be a good special needs mom. So many people say that to me. And I say, no, they teach me. Oh, my word.
Yeah.
They teach me. And we have moms that are in there that have kids with Down syndrome who are in their 60s. And 50s.
Wow.
And then our youngest joined the group. The mom was our age, but the child with Down syndrome was 3 months old.
Oh.
And was diagnosed on the day she was born.
Mm.
And the power of that adult with Down syndrome in her 60s asking if she could hold the newborn with Down syndrome, that picture in my head will never be erased.
Wow.
That's what support is. And I remember her whispering to the baby, you're going to be okay.
Aww.
You're going to be okay.
Mm.
And that's what it's about, this idea that we hold unswervingly to this hope we profess, not because we are faithful, but because he who promised is faithful. And Sandra, I know there's people listening today that are in the throes of despair. Maybe they just got a diagnosis of a child with special needs. And my part two, because it's not as much about special needs, but this one's about Katie. And so my thing I would say to them is find a support group. Mm-hmm. If there isn't one, start one. It doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to be a speaker and a writer like me. You can just be a normal person. And open up your home and let people cry on your couch, and you can cry on your couch with them.
Yeah.
And find Jesus. Open up a Bible. Go to a church. Find a church that welcomes your special need child. I've been so blessed that I have one. And Jesus promises to never leave you or forsake you. When you belong to him, he doesn't leave you. And this loneliness is very, very real that comes with being a special needs mom, but it doesn't have to be there.
Yeah. Jamie, thank you so much for sharing so transparently and for your heart to minister to other foster and adoptive parents, especially those moms parenting children with special needs. And we invite our listeners to catch part two of my conversation with Jamie Becker next week. You won't want to miss that. And thank you for listening today. I'm Sandra Flack, Executive Director of Justice for Orphans and your host for Orphans No More. You can find more episodes of this podcast on our website at justicefororphansny.org. Also on iTunes and Google Play by searching for the show by name, Orphans No More. Be sure to share and follow the podcast. You can also find and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. We'd like to give a shout out to our generous supporters who've contributed to underwrite our annual fundraising banquet coming up this September, beginning with Crystal Clear Finances of Latham, New York. They're fabulous supporters of Justice for Orphans. JFO is a nonprofit ministry on a mission to inspire, educate, and equip the body of Christ to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. To learn more, to contact us, or to donate, visit us online at justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard, and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.